Nation, Fear the 68 Networks. You got the legendary, the wizard, my big bro, the wizard, Williams. Hey, man, I appreciate you having been on the show, man. I appreciate you, you know, taking time out your day. You know, it's a holiday. You know, I know you got things going on, so I appreciate you, you know, giving your time, man. So how you been doing, man?
I'm good, man. Just trying to get through these crazy times, you know, staying indoors and just trying to stay safe and keep my family safe.
Right. And same here, man. I'm doing the whole the distance learning, man. So I'm dealing with that. I appreciate teaching a lot more, man.
For sure.
Have you been keeping up with the? I know you've been keeping up with the Terps this year. So I mean, what you think about them this season and how things are going and those last two wins, must wins they just got. So,
well, you know, thus far early on in the season, they've had some big wins. When you're talking about Wisconsin and Illinois, two really really good teams. You know, the Terps are, they don't have that size like when you were there, Travis, you know? And so they really bear when it comes to the interior. And so often, most nights, especially when you get into Big Ten play, they're going to be at a disadvantage with guys who can not only rebound the ball and play strong around the basket, but who can score around the basket. So it's going to take Coach Turgeon and the coaching staff just trying to figure it out and put together schemes that can help these guys on the defensive end. And then offensively, they got to be able to take advantage. You know, guys like Dante and Jerry, they're going to have to take advantage of these bigs on the other end with their perimeter play and being able to stretch guys out and beat them off the dribble to create easy opportunities on the other end. So that's the formula for them to win the season, because they just don't have what they need down low in terms of the depth that they'll need. Galen Smith gives them a good shot in the arm and he plays tough, and but you know, they just need more than him.
Right. Yeah. Obviously I've been keeping up with them, and like you said, that the inside play, man, this has been like, I saw them against Michigan. You know, and you know, Hunter, you know, went to work, and then you know, the kid at Indiana, you know, when he got going. But you know, like you said, that big win against Illinois, and then the last win, you know, as players, we know that, especially going towards tournament time, that momentum get going. You win a couple, it's just like us. We hit our first, we probably miss a few, but we hit our first shot. We're like, I bet, let's get it going. Like, I'm good now, let's go. So I'm pretty sure that they got that after these last two wins, you know, against Illinois and then the game against Wingate. So it was like it was a must win. You can't go around the team like that right now, because I know you were doing the broadcast with them, so you're not doing that right now. You missed that?
When we broadcast, we are, for the home games, we are up in the suites.
Okay.
So we are not near the players at all, but you know, ironically enough, you can see things from a different perspective. Normally, we're right there on the court, and right, you can see that side view and get that the version of the game as if I'm a player. But from the stands now, I can get that perspective of seeing the whole court, and so you can kind of see what's going on out there on the floor a little bit better, actually, right, from that point. But you're not as close to the action. You don't get the feel of the game like you would, and all those aspects of the game like you would when you're up close.
Right. And I asked Coach Williams this, man, just with the whole COVID situation. First, they didn't even know they was going to have a season. Yeah. First of all, last year they was doing really well. You know, everybody thought it was going to go far. Yeah. They was going to have a chance. And then your season ends like that. So as a player, as a former player, like, what does that do to you? Especially like, you know, Conway, you know, Sticks left. But what is that? I mean, you're like, man, we probably about to win the whole thing. We got a chance to win the whole thing. And then next thing you know, the season's gone. Right.
Yeah, it had to be a shock for the team. You know, just like you said, they certainly had a legitimate chance to win it all with the combination of being able to be an up-tempo team with Cowan out there pushing the ball and the way his floor vision went to another level in that second half of the season. And then in a half-court situation, you could go to a guy like Cowan and pick and roll, but also throw the ball inside to Jalen or hit his three. His threes were consistently starting to fall. So they could hurt you many different ways, not to mention guys like Ayala, Wiggins, Marcel, you know, just all of those guys who are putting in work right now. You mix that with a Cowan and a Jalen Smith. And, I mean, you have a remedy of for a championship-caliber team. So that had to be a tough blow. To soften it all, they did get an opportunity to hoist up the Big Ten championship. So you did end on a good note in that respect. But I know that's going to always be in the back of their mind, something that they always wonder, could they have done it? So I think that part of it is long-lasting. But the environment is what it is. And so as players, you just adapt, man, because I don't care. I know growing up for myself, we could play on the indoor court. We could play on the outdoor court. It could be snowing, whatever you're trying to do. Let's get this hoop in. So you adapt and you just play the game.
Yeah, and that's the same thing. You know, I was talking to Coach Williams last week about it. And that was the same thing. Like, I mean, if you're a competitor, you're going, open gym. You got no fans. There ain't nobody there watching you, cheering you on. So, we going, like you said, we going hoop. Like, we go to the playground. We going to get it in. I don't care who there. We going hoop. So, with that, it's like, you know, we was talking about the fans. You know how, you know, especially back in ACC, like, the fans was essential, especially you played a cold field. So, y'all, like, it was crazy there. You know what I mean? Like, we just talking about that, too. I mean, I didn't have an opportunity to play there. At Maryland, but just like the fan aspect, but now everything is more dependent on your bench. Now your bench really got to be involved. Whoever got the loudest bench got the home court advantage, regardless of where you're playing at.
And you really can see that, you know, the bench really, you have to generate that energy for each other now. And so you're absolutely correct. Where you're playing at really doesn't matter now. It's about whose bench has the most energy and who brings it from the very beginning. And then it's the job of the guys that's out there in the court to keep that momentum going. You gotta make positive plays. You gotta do things out there to have your bench going crazy for you. And so it's so important, that aspect of it now. But also, you in this environment, especially when you're talking about younger guys who are getting playing time and significant minutes, now to not deal with the opposing crowd, I think that gives a little bit more confidence, that gives you a little bit more of a comfort level out there. And so I think it helps younger players just to make that seamless transition from high school to college.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Like you said, that's you don't have that pressure now. You don't have that pressure going to the Dukes Arena and all those, like you said, those big, like me playing at Florida, that crowd was crazy, you know. So you had that pressure. So you kind of can go up there, you mess up, and then, you know, your team got your back or whatever. You don't have to worry about the crowd getting on you or the booing and all that. So it's like you said, like it's huge. It's interesting to me just watching them. Even when I'm watching NBA games, it's just, there's no fans in the stands. I mean, you might have a few sprinkled out, but it's like, it's different, man. Obviously,
that was a big part of my game, man. You know, not in the respect you would think. Like, for me, it was great to play in front of my family and friends and hear the crowd cheer for you when you did something great. But for me, I got so much joy playing on the road, having people cheer against me and screaming at me, and then I do something out there to shut them up. That made me feel so good, man. I love that part of the game much more than people cheering for me. So, it's just weird all the way around. Even, you know, with that mentality, you still don't have that to generate that energy. So it certainly is weird watching these guys, and more importantly, you see like the stands or the fans are they tend to sit close to the basketball court. So that kind of help you gauge what's out of bounds and things. So you see guys step out of bounds a lot more as well because the bleachers are so far away.
Right.
It distorts your feel for the game a little bit. So, you know, it takes getting used to it. But at the end of the day, like we said earlier, it's hoop.
You just hoop. I don't care who in the stands. Like I said, man, I was curious to see how things were going to go. I was just curious. Like, I'm pretty sure everybody was just curious about the fans not being there, how they're going to like integrate the sound. Now you can hear, I was telling Coach Williams, I didn't bring it up, but I'm like, imagine if there's no fans there, but everybody can hear us. Hey, everybody can hear exactly what he's saying, you know? Like, hey, I didn't even bring it up, bro, but I was like, imagine if the fans can hear exactly what he's saying.
Hey, it would be crazy.
He kind of mentioned it, but he didn't really go into it. And Gary, and he was like, you know, I can yell. I said, yeah, you lucky, man.
Imagine that, man. Imagine that.
Hey, the people behind our bench, they know exactly what he's saying, but like, they're the whole world.
My friends used to, when they used to come to the game, oh man, they used to wonder to sit so close to the bench, man, so they could hear Gary. So they could hear Coach, man. He was entertainment, man, for sure.
I don't know though, man. Hey, they even to hear what he's saying. They, I don't know, bro. It would have been ugly. I don't know. But
he definitely would have had to tone it down, you know, for sure.
Could he do it though? That's the thing.
He didn't do it though.
Because he's so into it. You know, he's so into it. So, and you know, he don't care. So hey, bro. I was going to bring it up. I said, you know what, bro? I'm gonna let it slide. Speaking of that though, I know when you got to Maryland, you know, it's so much going on, man. Like, first of all, what made you choose Maryland? I mean, I know what made me choose as far as being home. I'm from here and to be able to play here in front of your family. So what made you choose Maryland?
Well, you know, man, growing up in Prince George's County, man, I was a big Georgetown Hoyer fan with John Thompson and, you know, just the Hoyers. And so my dad, he's from North Carolina. So one time he took me to a Carolina University of Maryland game. And I had watched, you know, guys like Adrian Branch and was always a big fan. You know, the big guards who can handle the ball and play, because, you know, that's where I was from. I never played organized basketball until I got into high school. So my game consisted of just street ball, and nobody posts up in street ball. So you got to be able to handle it, you know. So I was always a fan of guys like a Adrian Branch. But I had the opportunity to see Len Bias, man. I'm watching the game and I saw this dude raise up and shoot that jumper. And it was the most beautiful thing I have ever seen. Man, and to see it in real life, it just caught my attention. And I just found myself starting to, you know, watch Maryland games more, look for the highlights to see Maryland. And all of a sudden, I wasn't watching Georgetown anymore. I was watching him, Len Bias. And so, you know, Len Bias had a direct impact on me becoming a University of Maryland fan. Not only that, when we would go out in the back of Benjamin started middle school and play pickup games, you know, right? You know how it is before the game starts, you yell out somebody's name, who you gonna pretend to be that day. Yeah. And I always would yell out Len Bias, man. And when it came time for me to make a decision, those type of things, I remembered those things. I remembered the impact that he had on not only me, but my community. And I wanted to have that same effect. I wanted, you know, the kids around the way, to when they playing pickup games, I wanted them to pretend like they were me, just like I did Len Bias, you know. And so I thought that the only way I could achieve that is to follow in his footsteps and play at the University of Maryland. So Len Bias is a huge reason why I went to the University of Maryland. And of course, also Coach Bob Wade, you know, when he came to my home, talked to my family, he just, it wasn't necessarily really about basketball. It was just how he, the comfort level he made me feel. He felt like a family member. He reminded me of my grandfather, you know, the way he looks and, you know, his mannerisms and how cool he was and chill, you know. Yeah. My granddad was like that as well. And so, you know, I felt very comfortable with him early on. And I felt like, you know, he would help me be the best that I could.
And like you said, man, that's huge, man. I know it's all about the comfort level. You know what I mean? For players that may not know, it's all about, I mean, just how you feel in regards to, how can I relate to the coach? Like you said, like, man, it was like, it felt like your grandpa. So it was like, you feel comfortable. You know what I mean? Absolutely. You know, that's huge. So when everything went down and all the crazy stuff that was going on at Maryland at the time, and then, you know, he left, what made you stay?
You know, Coach Williams and the staff, man, Coach Art Perry, Coach Billy Hahn, you know, those dudes came to my home, man. I never forget, you know, Coach Williams and the coach staff, they pulled up in my house. And I remember, you know, the kids in the neighborhood running down the street, you know, sitting outside my house on the block, just, you know, so they could just see him come out of my house, you know. And it was an exciting time for me. He talked about, Coach Williams talked about how he was surround, that I would be a focal point for the team, and how he felt that he could help me get, be the best player that I could be. He talked about possibly me playing at the next level. I had no idea about that, man. You know, the day and age now is just so different than when I played. I mean, you know, guys were not, where guys were from was not publicized as much. So I had no idea that guys from around in my area was going to the NBA and would, you know, playing on TV. I just thought that just happened to someone else from somewhere else. Right, you know, right, so right. I didn't know that it was a reality. So, you know, he really made me feel like he would help me be the best player that I could be. Once again, I wanted to be a good player at home. I wanted my family and friends to see me up close and personal. You know, a lot of kids shy away from that, but I wanted that. I wanted that. I wanted to take on that, man, and I wanted to show that I can have the same impact as Len Bias. I can aspire to be that level of player and what have you. I was a wild dude. I mean, who would think something like that? You know, that dude was everything. But I really felt that I wanted to come behind and give it a shot, see what I could do. And I wanted to do that in front of my family and friends. So, you know, Coach Williams and the coaching staff as a whole, they made me feel comfortable in the transition. They made me feel like they had a lot of confidence in me. And as I went on throughout my career, you know, Coach Williams was tremendous. And not only the growth in my skill set, but my mentality, man. He really helped me grow in having confidence in myself.
And that was, I mean, like I said, man, I didn't watch a lot of college basketball growing up until I got to the math of. Mm-hmm. But like, I mean, stories for days, man. Like you basically, how does it feel, man? Basically, I mean, I know you know what I mean? You big bro, you so humble, man. So, but how does it feel knowing that you were basically like the pillar, like that kind of like kept running together, even throughout the craziest times when things was going on, you know, obviously with the Len Bias and, you know, you have different coaches coming in. Like, how does it feel, man? Like you from here. Yeah. Like I was talking to Lonnie and I was like, man, how does it feel, you know, winning national championship? I'm from here and do it here. Like you home. So how does it feel for you, knowing that you was like that glue that kind of kept running together where everything was kind of like, in a sense, kind of like falling apart in a sense?
I mean, I'll tell you the truth, man. I didn't concentrate on that at all, man. I had no idea. The thing for me was that I didn't really even agonize about making the decision whether to stay or leave. Mm-hmm. You know, when I realized or when I found out that I could transfer and then play right away, that really heightened things on me making a decision on whether what I was going to do. And I think that most thought that it was in my best intentions to transfer so I can have an opportunity to play in the NCAA tournament. But for me, it's just like you said, I was at home, man. And that meant more to me than anything, to play in front of my family and friends. And like I said, impact the community and have guys come behind me to want to follow in my footsteps. I know how much that meant to me going through that process. And so I wanted to have that same impact, man. So, I was lucky enough to play in that PG County League, that 4A League with some not only great players, but great coaches, because they were ahead of their time. You know, they allowed me and many other guys to play with versatility. You know, virtually every big dude that I played against could dominate around the basket and shoot threes and beat you off the dribble, all of that. Right. And we talking about in the 80s, you know? And so I believe that my high school league was ahead of the curve, not only with the players, but the way the coaches coached. You know, and that really helped me a lot, especially with the transition from going to high school to college and going from a center power forward to a point guard, right. You know, and it was easy for me because of being in that environment in that PG County League, but also the roots of my game came from street ball. And so the combination of that allowed me to be a versatile player and make that transition. And that really helped me a lot. I think that, but the biggest thing for me was Coach Williams and his confidence that he had in me. Like, for instance, I remember after we lost at home to a Coppin State, man. And after that game, I went to Coach Williams and I told him, I said, you know, I believe that I could be the point guard and Tion McCoy could switch to the off guard offensively. He guard the point guard on defense, but offensively, you know, I believe that I can handle the ball and run the team at a higher rate than he did. And he could shoot the ball. He could shoot better than I could back then. So I thought that blend would work well for us. Well, the next day in practice, you know, Coach Williams threw the ball out and he said, hey, okay, you go ahead and run the point. Press me all practice, man, just to see, you know, put me in intense pressure just to see if I can handle it. And after that, he was confident that I could, and that meant something to me, right. You know, that he would have that confidence in me, and I did not take that for granted. And things like that just grew, you know, as the years went on. You know, my junior year, senior year, how, you know, he would call on me to be aggressive to score. You know, mm-hmm. when I stepped on the court, I felt like he felt that I was the baddest dude out there, man. And I tried to prove him right every time, man. He motivated the crap out of me for sure. Because I know, you know him, he's not, it's nothing fake at all about him. He's going to be very real with you. And I felt like for him to have that feeling about me, that, okay, I must be a raw dude out here and I'm going to show him every chance I get. And so that motivated me. And I feel like that was one of the biggest reasons why I got to a high level in college and was able to be an NBA player for such a long period of time.
And like you said, man, that's huge, man, in regards to your coach having that much confidence in you. It makes you go out there, like you said, I'm going to go out there and prove him right, because he believed in me this much. So I'm going to go out there and basically prove to him that you're not wrong, in a sense. Man, 6'9", running the PG, I mean, now it's more normal now because you got going at 7 feet. He's on 6'9" back then, man. I mean, you had the Magic Johnsons, you had the Oscar Roberts, you got those limited people, but when you thought 6'9", they could shoot it, could run the PG. Like, obviously, you know, growing up, you being tall, but the coaches want to get in the post because you're big, you're post player. So, what was your inspiration to be? For me, I know I watched Michael Jordan. That's what I was watching growing up. So every time I went to the basketball court, I'm imitating all his moves. So what was your? I'm pretty sure Magic Johnson had to be one of them. But like, what was your inspiration? Like, what inspired you to basically to run the way you did, man? Like you said, you point guard at 6'9" back then. You know what I mean?
Hey, you know, I used to watch George Gervin, man, Iceman, mm-hmm. and so. you know, big guards. And like I said, Adrian Branch, those guys had handle. And for me, I took a lot of pride in, I didn't want to get the ball. And when those little guards would push up 94 feet thinking they could take the ball, I didn't want to turn my back and crab dribble guys up the court. I wanted to not only show the dude who was pushing up on me, the little guard who was pushing up on me, but I wanted to show his coaching staff. And I wanted to show everybody that was in the gym that day and everybody watching that if this dude pushed up on me, I'm gonna shake his drawers off. You know, and that's what I was trying to do every time. I was trying to embarrass dudes who were trying to take the ball from me. And then me being a point guard really took my game to the next level because I took a lot of pride in. I thought that when you're a point guard out there, you are the coach on the floor, you know. So I took a lot of pride in that. And I made sure that my knowledge of what coaches wanted to happen out there went to another level. Before I got switched to a point guard, when we would run plays, I knew what I was supposed to do. Right. But when I got switched to the point guard, I knew what everybody was supposed to do. I started to learn the game that way. When we made plays, it wasn't, oh, I pass it to this side and then I go here. It's when I make this pass, the guy over here, he's making a down screen. That guy is cross screen. I knew what everyone was doing on every play. And so my knowledge of the game just grew to a whole nother level. And I could direct guys where they needed to go if they didn't know where they were supposed to be. It allowed me to, when I would call plays, I could see, okay, we're set. And when the play started, I didn't pay attention to the play anymore because I knew it was going to happen. But now I started to pay attention to the defense. And so I could tell when guys were out of position, when this action happened right here, this guy's out of position, he's not going to be able to get there. So a lot of people thought that, oh man, this guy's 6'9", he's making some great passes, but I mean, it was normal passes, bounce passes, whatever. Anybody can make the pass. It was that I would pass dudes open. You know, I knew it was going to happen before it happened. Mm-hmm. And so that took me to another level, not only with passing the ball, but scoring as well. I could pick my poison when to be aggressive out there based on just my knowledge of knowing what has transpired throughout the game, the passes mm-hmm. I was making, the defensive position I was making guys be in because mm-hmm. of what I was doing earlier. And now it's time to attack. I was in tune to all of those type of things. And it all, the root of it all, the basement level of it all was just that I had a knowledge of knowing the plays, what everybody was doing on the plays. So that really helped me grow a lot. And it was because, you know, I was the point guard. I mean, oftentimes Coach Williams gave me the freedom to, you know, how you push the ball up the court and then you look over to see what play the coach wants you to run. Yeah. You know, oftentimes I would call the play without looking over. He would have that confidence in me. And I know he wasn't that type of coach. He would want to call the plays out, but we sort of had a kinship out there. I understood what he wanted to get accomplished out mm-hmm. there through the course of the game. And so I started to get a feel for the calls that he would make. And, you know, I would start to do it sometimes on my own so that we can get into it very quickly and I didn't have to look over. And those type of things just helped my confidence grow to the next level.
Yeah, man, that's, like you said, man, that's huge when you, like you said, man, your coach got that much confidence in you that you can kind of like, you can, like you say, you're the coach on the court, you know what I mean? So you run the whole thing, but he had that much confidence in you where he let you go ahead. And you know, like you said, Coach Williams not like that. He likes to be in control. So that's huge, man. What I'm curious about, and I'm pretty sure a lot of people are too, in regards to, like you said, with everything going on back then, man, you weren't able to play on TV like that, and then the tournaments, you weren't able to play in the NCAA. Like, you know, nowadays, man, players are getting up out of there quick. They ain't happy about something, they're gone, you know what I mean? And you, like you said, you 6'9", like, the way you used to book it, so you had opportunities to either, like, transfer or to go to the league. So, and then, like you said, you're not getting those opportunities to play on TV, you're not the tournaments, so, like, but you stayed, though.
Yeah.
So for me, I
can't say that I was in college and I was just this studious person. I knew that I wanted to play basketball and I knew that there was other things that went with that. And I learned that at a very, very early age. Let me give you a quick story. When I was a young boy, freshman in high school, many people don't know this, but I was cut from my JV squad in my freshman year. And to keep my sister from yelling at me, so I needed to do some extracurricular. She didn't like that I was just coming home and hanging out. So I was the team manager on the basketball team for the first half of the season. And then when the report cards come out, you had to have the 2.0 average in order to stay on the team. Well, out of 15 guys on my team, 10 of them got cut after the grades. And so I was a 3.0 student. That's how I got my opportunity to play. And so that right there meant something to me. I learned very early on that, okay, we out here hooping, but there's other things that go along with that. You got to make sure you're putting in the work in the classroom in order to get this opportunity. So I took that part of it very seriously because I learned it very early. For me, when I'm in college and I'm playing, and it wasn't a thought in my head to leave early or anything like that, because my mom, man, she didn't care really too much about no hoops. It was about get that degree. And so I wanted to make sure that she knew that I took that seriously. And, you know, if a guy left as a junior back then, it was like, oh, my goodness, he left school early, you know. And so it wasn't based on the talent level. It was just guys stayed in college. So it was virtually pros playing in college, in a college environment. So you wasn't playing against freshman guys learning a system that had a lot of talent. You were playing against junior and senior guys who had a lot of talent, that understood how to play the game, was very smart in the game, knew what the coaches wanted to accomplish, and had a world of just natural talent, skill set. And so all of that met at the same time to really take the college game to a whole nother level. And so that was just a different environment there. And so you really had to be in tune, not just to your skill set, but mentally what was going on out there, because, you know, players were just so in tune to what the coaches wanted to get done and accomplish out there on both ends of the court.
And you brought him up, man. And that's another big bro, Adrian Branch. Great dude. That's like my mentor, man. Like I didn't have a chance to see him play. Mm-hmm. At the far, I mean, obviously you need to go YouTube and all that, Google and all that, bro. I heard like that though, bro.
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, the lefty is always cool to see the lefties out there, you know, because you just don't see too many of them. But right. A big guard like that, you know, handling double knee braces, you know, it was just cool. He was just cool, you right. know, and you know, he had that serious swag out there, and that I took that and put that in part of my game as well. You know, with the high socks, you know, that was just some swag that I wanted to have from watching a George Gervin highlights. And then I pulled him up in a squad scrimmage game and had a really good scrimmage. And so I kept it that way, you know, and it was, you know, guys didn't do that too much back then. They were wearing socks so low that you can see the tape over top of it, you know, and wear their socks so low. So it was way different back in those days for somebody to wear high socks, but that was just a part of my swag. That was, you know, a part of, something that separated me from others.
Right. Hey, now I was gonna bring that up too, cause I think I did the fight one game of Merlin. The high socks, man. The high socks. The high socks and you throwing up the three. I remember we played Duke, and I saw you walking in the arena, and I made a three. We was playing against Duke at home, and I made a three, and I threw up the joint because I saw you walking.
I remember, bro.
So what? I know you said George Gervin, but like even that, you were doing like players obviously do it now with the. Yeah. You was doing that way before.
Oh, I was the originator, man. I was the originator. You know, the first dudes that copied me was them dudes on the Clippers, the young boys on the Clippers.
Quinn Richardson and
Tim Richardson. So you know, them young boys, they had a big following, man. So they really liked that swag when I threw up the three sign after I hit a shot, man. They would, whenever we would play the Clippers, they would always geek out over that stuff, man. And so all of a sudden you start to see them doing it as well, and it sort of caught on around the league, and everybody started doing it around the league. And you know, hey, it's all good, man. It feels good to be able to go out there and perform and have your peers really take notice of it and acknowledge that. And, you know, hey, it was all good for sure.
Hey, you the originator, man. You got to trademark that thing. Hey, they was stepping on them. James Harden dude doing it.
Yeah, it's all over the place now. Yeah.
Are you doing the wrong way? Hey, you doing the wrong, man. You doing the wrong way. That's what you said. So when you finished up at Maryland, got drafted, man. Like, how was that? I mean, obviously, man, that's a huge dream, man. You know what I mean? You did it, like you said, you stayed at Maryland, you went through all the ups and downs that incurred during that time when you was at Maryland, then you get drafted, man. What was that feeling like? Like, what was?
Man, it was, like I said earlier, I didn't really know that was a reality as a young kid, you know, youngin'. I think it was about maybe my sophomore year, after my sophomore year, going into my junior year. I saw the Street and Smith magazine and I'm looking through it and it had me rated pretty high as a point guard in the country. And it talked about how, I resembled Magic Johnson and I was going to the NBA. And up until that point, I didn't, you know, it wasn't a reality, but it was sort of a reality then. I still didn't really believe that part of it. But, you know, as I went on and I got older, I started to really hone in on being able to dominate guys in the ACC in terms of scoring the basketball. And in my senior year, you know, just going through the season the way I did, I really felt like, you know, I was the best player in the ACC. And in those times, it was no question that the ACC was the best conference in college basketball. So, you know, I felt like I was a real dominant player there. And, you know, by the time I was a senior, I really felt like that I put myself in a position to continue playing basketball. So for me, it was just sort of the next thing. You know, when I was in high school, okay, what's the next? Okay, we go to college and we play basketball, we play on TV, it's whatever. And now, you know, now it's going to the NBA. That's the next step. So it wasn't like this big thing for me, but it was just sort of like I'm working hard and I'm doing what I need to do to be the best that I can be. And so now it's on to the next thing. And so I never saw the next thing as this huge thing. It's just, you know, in the moment and trying to be the best that you can be. And so it was just great to hear my name called. It was kind of bittersweet because at the same time, my father was going through cancer. He had cancer and ultimately passed away. And so he wasn't able to come to Portland. It was in Portland that year. He wasn't able to be there with me when I was drafted. Just a big part of my success throughout. And for him not to be there with me at the pinnacle, you know, it was bittersweet. I was happy in the moment, but you know, I was thinking about he wasn't there with me. And then right before I had to show up for training camp in Sacramento, he passed away shortly before then. So it was just a tough time for me. It really hit me in the gut, man. And if, when I reminisce and think back on it, it's probably something that I never rebounded from.
That's crazy, man. Yeah, sorry to hear that. I can only imagine, like you said, man, that's you go doing something that you probably never thought of, then you have that going on at the same time, and then you got to report, you got to go to work.
Yeah,
you got that going in your brain, man. So I
was thinking about a whole lot of things, man. You know, it was just, you know, I remember as a high school player when I talked about earlier, as I was a team manager, and then I played in the last part of the season for maybe like six games or so. I remember coming out at a locker room after a game and walking out to meet my family, and he would just be looking at me, man. And I was thinking to myself, man, what is he looking at me like that for? But as a father, it was a sense of pride, and he was so proud of me. And after every game I played, I searched for that, man. You know, and to lose that, it was a big blow to me.
I can imagine, man. Yeah, I can only imagine. So in regards to like playing the NBA, what was your some of your fondest moments? Like I said, I mean, I never had the opportunity to actually play. So especially back, that's when I mean, in my that's what was good. I mean, NBA was what it was. But what was your like some of your fondest moments? Something that you like that you always reminisce on? I mean, I know you got a lot of stories, man. But like, yes. Some of your fondest memories that you know.
Man, I remember it was a lot of things, man. I was the only rookie on the team, so I had to do a lot of getting newspapers for guys in the morning on the road, or waking up to get guys coffee, or singing for them dudes, man. It was craziness, man. And so they were really they didn't play around with that stuff back then, man. They would it'd be 6-7 guys that jump on you if you thought you was gonna be rebellious again. Yes. So it was serious back then on that stuff because it was a brotherhood, man, and you had to do your part early on to show that you know you respected the brotherhood, and you know it was hard work. You know, it was hard work. Guys were big and physical, still maintained quickness out there, man. So it was just a whole nother level of basketball. And I was lucky enough to play with veteran guys who were very professional, like Wayman Tisdale, or Spud Webb, Mitch Richmond, Hall of Famer. You know, those guys really took me under their wing. You know, a guy like Randy Brown, a young guy who ultimately later on in his career won a championship as well. But he was huge for me, you know, on and off the court. Really good friend of mine that really showed me the ropes. And man, it was huge. Anthony Bonner, you know, I just played on a team that had a host of veteran guys who really looked after me, man. So it was a great time, especially going through the things that I was going through personally. Those guys really helped me transition and make it through, you know. And so I'm grateful to those guys, man. They probably don't even know what I was going through and what they helped me through during those times. But it was a great experience just playing at the highest level, just getting better and wanting to play against the best competition ever, man. You know, watching these guys on TV and now having the opportunity to play against them, it was huge, man. And I wanted all of that, man. You know, I wanted that competition. I really thrived on that. And man, it was a great, great experience for me to not only go through that, but I mean, you know, I was in Sacramento, way in California, coming from PG County. You know, it was not only different on the basketball court, but just the culture in Sacramento. It was not a city like I was used to being in, and so it was a lot of things that I had to adjust to. But like I said, I had great people around me, so that transition was easy for me.
That's what's up. You played with Steve.
Yes.
You played with Steve. How was that, man? Basically playing with somebody that knew who you were. I mean, you big bro. So, but then you know you got somebody to play with that played at the same university. Y'all played the same university. You got the, you know, I mean, legendary, you know, Hall of Famers there. How was it to play with Steve? You know, I know you was older, so I know you was like big bro to him, even when he was there. At Houston.
So you know, like you in the off season, you remember me and Tony Massenburg, man. We would get like the host of them pros, man. We'd go at North Gym, get this bump on, get this hoop on, and expose you guys to playing against pros while you were in college. So that now when season start, man, it's easy out here. You know, I've been playing against pros all summer. Right. So you know, Steve was out there as well. So I got an opportunity to know him. Before he was an NBA player. So, you know, you could see the talent that he had and you knew that he was going to be a great player, man. But I didn't really know him personally like that. And so playing in Houston, I actually stayed with him for about the first 3 weeks or so before I got my crib. He didn't want me to stay in a hotel, man. So he was like, man, I want you to stay at my crib. So I got to know Steve, man, real cool dude. But the biggest thing about him was that I respect about him is that when he was on the court, man, he literally exhausted himself out there. You know, after games, he was exhausted. He left everything out there. I never knew that about him, watching him from afar in college and playing pickup games with him, things like that. So I got to see that firsthand. And right. Man, it was awesome to see the respect for the game that he had and how he gave everything out there. I mean, he literally gave everything out there. And it was awesome to see him play like that.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, man, I mean, a lot of stuff that you're telling me, I didn't even know myself, you know.
Yeah.
Obviously, you see the work being done, but a lot of people don't understand what goes behind all that. They just see the rewards of it all. They see, you know.
He was a hard worker, bro. He was a hard worker for sure. Yeah.
So how was your transition? Because I ain't gonna lie, even for myself now, I retired when I was in 2017. I ain't gonna lie, my body don't miss the plan.
Yeah, yeah.
But, right? Hey, but I missed the grind of it all. I missed waking up, okay, I'm going to the gym, and then I'm gonna do a tour a day, and then I'm gonna get a call from my agent, we're gonna work out these. So what was the transition like from, okay, now I'm no longer playing, and that lifestyle to, now it's normal. I mean, I know from my standpoint, I know how I felt about it, but I can imagine, especially on your level in that stage, like, I know it's a difference.
Yeah. You know what? I think that when you look at the modern day player, they do a better job of being aware, you know, so they start working on their careers after the game before they retire. You know, you see that's happening a little bit more consistently. So for me, it's a weird transition, you know, after being in that gauntlet, man, for 11 years, you know, just, it's not really an off season. You might take a few weeks off, but then you know, you're back at it. And it was a real grind, like you say, to your body. But you miss the games, man, and you miss the camaraderie with your teammates and just that whole environment that went along with playing the game, not just playing the game. So that part of you missed. But for me, it was a little different. You know, I had a son that was born, my youngest, and he was born prematurely, you know, born like 24 and a half weeks, bro. So I was scared to death. I didn't know if he would make it or not. And so I couldn't focus on basketball anymore. And so that retired me because I wanted to be around him 24/7. I mean, I didn't know if he would make it or not. I was really scared. And so it took some years before he was able to, you know, be able to be a little bit more independent and do things on his own. So I wanted to be there through the transition. And for me, I because of the reasons that I retired from the game, I don't miss it as much as I thought I would, you know, mm-hmm. But there are times when you look back and go, especially the way the game is played now, from the perimeter so much. In my day, it was inside out. It was very physical on the outside. You could be more touchy-feely and nullify guys' athleticism and quickness by putting hands on them and things like that, man. I just imagine, my goodness, if I could play in this environment now where guys can't touch you and hand check you as much, oh, my goodness, you know. The success. Right. I always tell my mom, man, if you could have had me like 15, 20 years later, my life would be totally different right now.
hey, it's, like you said, man, you would imagine, like you said, man, them people tell, even people telling me, like, man, oh, man, you right now playing in the stretch fours. It's a thing now. They ain't no big man no more, you know what I mean? You know, and I was talking to Coach, I was talking to Coach Williams, you know, and probably a few years after I left Maryland, man, I hit him up and I just apologized. I apologized to him because I was like, man, you know, you try to give me advice. You try to, you know what I mean, tell me what to do, but I wasn't listening. You know what I mean? I wasn't, because, you know, man, when you're young, I'm like, I mean, I was getting, I had people in my ear. I was like, man, you know, you got to be like this. So when he telling me to do something, like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, so I was, man, we bumped heads a lot. We bumped heads a lot. I mean, a lot of people don't know that. Like, we used to, man, I used to get kids out of practice a few times, you know what I mean? We used to bump heads a lot. But it was more so because I was like, okay, well, I was told to do this, but you telling me to do this. Like, I didn't come in for this. So it was that thing, man. And I was telling him, like, man, like, you know, I appreciate you. You know, a lot of stuff that you try to teach me, I understand now. Being that total, that having that total package in a sense. You know, he always told me, okay, you can shoot it, but you have an inside game too. It can take you a long way. You can make more money. You know, think about like Lonnie Bassett. Because when I was looking at Merlin, I used to watch Terrence Morris play. Yeah. So I was like, oh, I want to be like him. I want to do exactly what this dude is doing. He can shoot it. You know, he can play a little bit of this. So he was versatile.
Yeah.
So
you know what? When you say that, I think that's the biggest loss of a Lynn Bias. You know, you look at Lynn Bias playing in college, and he was equivalent to Michael Jordan. And so you see Michael Jordan going to play for the Chicago Bulls, and once the kids start to see that, you start to see guys just mimic his style of play, and a lot of them got to the highest level mimicking the style. Not quite, you know, getting there, but just mimicking his style of play. I think that was a huge loss to the NBA, because I think it delayed that process. When you talk about a Lynn Bias, he was a guy, a power forward who played with his back to the basket, but could also shoot from deep. So I think that transition of the game would have happened a lot earlier, because I believe that had he gotten an opportunity to play in the NBA, he would have impacted guys the way they played the game, just like Michael Jordan did. And so I think the evolution of the game would have happened a lot quicker had he had the opportunity to play in the NBA. So I think that was a huge loss for the NBA, not only just to see him play, but the impact he would have had on other players coming behind.
Right. Now, and I mean, like, obviously I didn't have a chance to like actually, when he was here, to see him play. I mean, I think Coach Dickerson, he gave me a tape of the Lynn Bias game when they played against North Carolina. I think when it was number one, my brother got that tape. I still ain't got that tape back yet. But I had that game, and I watched that game. I'm like, I'm watching it, and I'm like, obviously, I was born when he was there, so that was, I was born, but I was watching the game. Like, he making it look way too easy. Like, easy. I'm like, you said that jump shot, man, pretty raising up the way he was. Dunking it backwards from outside the paint. Like, I'm watching this. I'm like, this is crazy. Like, and like you said, you actually was through that. So you was basically, it's just like me going to watch Merlin at the Coldfield House when, you know, the year they won in that donut. You was actually able to like see that whole process, man. Like, I'm pretty sure you want to go see them play in person, right? Like, so what was that like?
Just to see him play in person, that's what made me a fan of his. You know, watching it on TV, you kind of got a feel for, you know, what he could do out there. But just seeing it in person, that changed me from being a Georgetown Hoyas fan to a Terp fan. He was just so impactful, you know, that I started to mimic him out on the basketball court and just try to do the things that and shoot the way he did, have that type of form. It took me years to really work on my form and shooting the ball to where I became a shooter. But I tell you what, during those times, it was just great just trying to learn and follow behind him. And so he was very impactful for me, not only just choosing to go to Maryland, but the impact that I wanted to make and how serious I was about that was because I was trying to attain a goal. I was trying to have the impact like Lynn Bias did. And so that fueled me as well.
Now you man, for me, you mean, you definitely did it for even like when we used to hang out together, man, just to see the impact that you had on people, man, when you walk, and you was always humble, man. You was, man.
It was always cool, man, because, you know, a lot of guys, they get to a high level and they come back home and they got to be around a lot of hate and other players trying to put them down because they didn't achieve. And all. I can't say I really went through that process, man. You know, coming back home, you know, a lot of players showed a lot of love and they wanted to learn. Guys were asking me questions all the time. And I mean, we would have pickup games all around the city, man. So I played against a whole lot of different guys, and so it was always love, and that was cool, man, to come back and be around my peers and have them be as happy and proud of me as my family and my close friends, you know. So that felt good to always be a part of that, and so that was part of how I carried myself. I didn't feel like I needed to be braggadocious about things or whatever, you know. I just felt like, you know, when I stepped out on the court, I was very confident. Coming from the environment that I came from, if you wasn't, you'd get swallowed up. So that was a bare minimum for me. And you know, also watching Lynn Bias off the court, getting interviewed, and you would see him on news channels and things like that, man. And he was always humble. He was always chill. And so that meant something to me as well. So you know, he had an impact on me in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, man. Like I said, I know for me personally, man, knowing you and how you were, man, how you are as a person, man, I tell people all the time, man, just humble, man. Every time we went places or we did things, like you was just so cool. Like you was real PG with it. You was, yeah, no doubt, man.
hey, hang around you know, the young fellas, man. Y'all was always, you know, y'all was always cool, man. Y'all always listened. You know, it wasn't like you guys were know-it-alls or things like that at all, man. So you guys were always humble as well, man. So it was always cool to hang out with the younger guys like yourself.
Yeah, and I appreciate even, like, I remember you and Tony coming up to the gym and working me out during the summers. Man, those things like that, man, just a lot of, I tell people all the time, man, that, you know, we had more people like a you to come back and just to help the youngins, man, because we look up to you guys, we see you guys, we see what you're doing, you're in the league, like, oh, we're gonna be like you, but just to have you come back and just help out or to give advice or to speak and stuff like that, I mean, that is a lot for me. I mean, I'm far removed, but I remember those things. I take those things with me. Those things don't, and a lot of times when we're in the moment, we don't understand or comprehend what we might mean to somebody else. But you know what I mean? Like man, for you, everything that you did for me, the advice you used to give me, man, keep it 100. You used to keep it real 100. Like, I mean, for myself, I appreciate it. I know you got the book. You and Tony was doing the book about land bias. Yes. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, you know, me and Tony, we played together in college, man. So we often get together, me and a lot of the guys, man, and we just reminisce about the old days oftentimes. And it always leads to, you know, Lynn Bias, the impact of it all. So we just thought one day, hey, you know what? I didn't realize he had that type of impact on you like he did on me. We thought it'd be a good idea to write this book, man. And most know about Lynn Bias, his the accolades, you know, ACC Player of the Year, lottery pick, you know, those type of things. But and the circumstances surrounding his death, but few know the impact that he had, you know, in his life and his death, you know, the positive impact. You know, I graduated from the University of Maryland. In my time there, and you know, the academic support went to another level after Lynn Bias' death. The things that were uncovered during that time led to the academic support going to another level at the University of Maryland. And just the impact that he had on the community, it was like our family member. Right. He wasn't just a great player. You know, we all felt a kinship with him, and it was devastating. And me and Tony, we wanted the world to know the impact that he had on all of us, not only just me and him personally, but the community. We felt like, man, he was one of the biggest figures that ever came from this area, and a few people know about that. And so we thought it was important to highlight the positive impacts that he had, because you know, so many know the other part of his story. So we wanted to make sure that the whole thing was told. So that everybody can understand the perspective that we were coming from and what he meant to us as a whole.
And like you said, man, the impact, like I said, I didn't have a chance to see him play in person, but like I was over in Ukraine, bro. I was in Ukraine and they showed, we was in film, we was about to watch film, and the documentary came on and my Ukraine player's like, oh, you went to Maryland. Like, so they see that, like you said, the impact, I mean, it still talks about to this day. It's still
Hey, let me tell you something, Travis. I remember the documentary they did on Lynn Bias. So I think that I was the only guy that was interviewed that didn't play with him. I didn't make the cut on the film, but you know, it was a moment in the film when they asked me about, I'm just talking about him, that I had to just take a minute, you know, because man, I was just crying. I was maybe like 40 years old, man, you know, and it was just still, he was just a superhero to me. And I didn't realize that it was still that painful for me, you know, it years and years later, you know, like, man, that dude was just everything, man. He was so impactful. And so, you know, it was just great to, as much as we can get out, get the information out on him, man, it just makes me feel good because he just has such an impact on my career.
Yeah, man, like you said, man, I mean, just some people don't want to talk about it. Some people still, like you said, it's a sensitive subject. You know, you bring it up like this because, like you said, man, the impact that he had on this community, like not like, honestly the world, because man, I heard at his funeral, man, it was like a president passing away. Like, how many people was there? Yeah. Like, it's just,
it's crazy.
It's a bigger than basketball type of thing. Like he had that much impact. I mean, like I said, man, he's still talking about to this day. You know what I mean? To this day. So
yeah, man. Look, Lessons from Lenny. You know, that's the name of our book, and the title says it all. If there were lessons learned in his life and death that me and Tony Massenburg took to heart, and we wanted to be able to express those things, man. So it was great to be able to go through the process of writing this book. With him, so it was awesome for sure.
Where can you get the book from?
Man, you can get it from anywhere they sell books. Also, you can get it from lessonsfromlenny.com. You get autographed copy from if you order it from lessonsfromlenny.com. But you can get it anywhere you sell books. So it's available all over.
Okay, cool. Yeah, man, definitely go out and purchase that book. I mean, like a person like myself, man, like. Just his mom came and spoke in my church. His mom, his mom speaks or whatever. His mom came and spoke in my church, and just to hear her story as a mom and going through all that and still going, probably dealing with that. And you know, I mean, like you said, because it's still talking about to this day, going through that. Just hear her courage and how strong she was going through that whole process. But yeah, man, that's definitely a story that needs to be told, especially for somebody that actually went to Maryland that was there.
Yeah.
Going through everything, you know, I mean, people definitely need to hear that, especially the young athletes as well, you know.
Absolutely. It's told from two different perspectives. You know, Tony had the opportunity to play with him. So he speaks from a perspective of having an opportunity to play with his idol, being a teammate with him, being a guy who was in his circle and having something like that happen. And then I speak from a perspective as an impressionable young high school kid, just starting to think about the process of getting a scholarship at a university. So I talk about how that impacted my process at my point in my career, and Tony talks about his. So we speak from two different perspectives, but the impact was certainly it was certainly huge for both of us.
That's huge, man. Like you said, man, a lot of people need to hear it. You know, you got a lot of people that are probably trying to tell the story from different aspects, but to have coming from people that actually play that Merlin, that played with him, to hear those stories, man. Like you said, man, it's definitely needed. It's definitely needed. Hey, big bro. I appreciate you, man.
Absolutely. Joining
Go With Terpins with Travis Garrison on the Field of 68 Networks. I appreciate you taking time with your day, man. Yeah. Hey, when I hit you up, hey, you always, bro. You always,
of course, man. You my guy, man, for sure. Forever, nah, bro. Believe it.
Hey, nah, I really appreciate you, man. It's a lot of stuff that I didn't know, man. That it was good to chop it up. And I'm pretty sure, man, a lot of people out there want to know, you know, those backstories that you just shared, man. Yeah. I appreciate your time, man. You know, Happy New Year's, like you said before, man. But I really appreciate you, though. Real talk, man. About not just this, but just everything that you did for me as a player. And I'm pretty sure everybody else that you helped along the way, man. So I'm telling you, we appreciate you, bro.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you.